hiding real contradictions. Decompression is the permanent control of both antagonists by the ruling class. The third force radicalizes contradictions and leads to their supersession in the name of individual freedom and against all forms of constraint. Power has no option but to smash or incorporate the third force without admitting its existence. To sum up, millions of men lived in a huge building with no doors or windows. The feeble light of countless oil lamps competed with the unchanging darkness. As had been custom since remotest antiquity, the upkeep of the lamps was the duty of the poor, so that the flow of oil followed the alternation of revolt and pacification. One day, a general insurrection broke out, the most violent that this people had ever known. Its leaders demanded a fair allotment of the costs of lighting. A large number of revolutionaries said that what they considered a public utility should be free. A few extremists went so far as to clamor for the destruction of the building, which they claimed was unhealthy, even unfit for human habitation. As usual, the more reasonable combatants found themselves helpless before the violence of the conflict. During a particularly lively clash with the forces of order, a stray bullet pierced the outer wall, leaving a crack through which daylight streamed in. After a moment of stupor, this flood of light was greeted with cries of victory. The solution had been found. All they had to do was make some more holes. The lamps were thrown away or put in museums, and power fell to the window makers. The partisans of radical destruction were forgotten, and even their discreet liquidation, it seems, went almost unnoticed. Everyone was arguing about the number and position of the windows. And then a century or two later, their names were remembered when the people, the eternal malcontent, had grown accustomed to plate glass windows and took to asking extravagant questions. "To drag out our days in a greenhouse, is that living?" they asked. The consciousness of our time oscillates between that of the walled-up man and that of the prisoner. For the individual, the oscillation takes the place of freedom. Like a condemned man, he paces up and down between the blank wall of his cell and the barred window that represents the possibility of escape. If somebody knocks a hole in the cellar of isolation, hope filters in with the light. The good behavior of the prisoner depends on the hope of escape, which prisons foster. On the other hand, when he is trapped by a wall with no windows, the man can only feel the desperate rage to knock it down or break his head against it, which can only be seen as unfortunate from the point of view of an efficient social organization. The man who is walled up has nothing to lose. The prisoner still has hope. Hope is the leash of submission. When power's boiler is in danger of exploding, it uses its safety valve to lower the pressure. It seems to change. In fact, it only adapts itself and resolves its difficulties. There is no authority which does not see, rising against it, an authority which is similar, but which passes for its opposite. But nothing is more dangerous for the principle of hierarchical government than the merciless confrontation of two powers driven by a rage for total annihilation. In such a conflict, the tidal wave of fanaticism carries away the most stable values. No man's land eats up the whole map, establishing everywhere that the interpretation of nothing is true. Everything is permitted. History, however, offers not one example of a titanic conflict which has not opportunely diffused and turned into a comic opera battle. What is the source of this decompression? The agreement on matters of principle, which is implicitly reached by the warring powers. The hierarchical principle remains common to the fanatics of both sides. Opposite the capitalism of Lloyd George and Krupp appears the anti-capitalism of Lenin and Trotsky. From the mirrors of the masters of the present, the masters of the future are already smiling back. The tyrant dies smiling, for he knows that after his death, tyranny will merely change hands and slavery will never end. Bosses differ according to their modes of domination, but they are still bosses, owners of a power exercised as a private right. From this moment, the point of contact between two powers becomes the point of decompression. To identify the enemy with evil and crown one's own side with the halo of good has the strategic advantage of ensuring unity of action by cannibalizing the energy of combatants. Leaders, with a capital L, betray it. To begin with, the real struggle takes place between the leader of the game and the capital L leader. Never, and for good reason, has an absolute confrontation been carried through. So far, the last fight has only had false starts. Everything must be resumed from scratch. History's only justification is to help us do it. Under the process of decompression, antagonists who seemed irreconcilable at first sight grow old together, become frozen in a purely formal opposition, lose their substance, neutralize, and molder into each other. Today, by the grace of the ecumenical miracle, the slogan, "Workers of the World Unite," celebrates the union of the world's bosses. A touching scene, the common element in the antagonism, the seed of power, which a radical struggle would have rooted out, has grown up to reconcile the estranged brothers. Is it as simple as this? Of course not. The farce would lose its entertainment value. On the international stage, those two old hands, capitalism and anti-capitalism, carry on their lover's banter. How the spectators tremble when they begin to quarrel. How they stamp with glee when peace blesses the loving couple. Is interest flagging? A brick is added to the Berlin Wall. The bloodthirsty Mao gnashes his paper teeth, while in the background a choir of little Chinese nitwits sing paeans to the fatherland, family, and work. Patched up like this, the old melodrama is ready to hit the road. The ideological spectacle keeps up with the times by bringing out harmless plastic antagonisms. Are you for or against Brigitte Bardot, the Beatles, mini cars, hippies, nationalization, spaghetti, old people, the TUC, miniskirts, pop art, thermonuclear war, hitchhiking? There is no one who is not accosted at every moment of the day by posters, news flashes, stereotypes, summoned to take sides over each of the prefabricated trifles that consciously stop up all the sources of everyday creativity. In the hands of power, these particles of antagonism are molded into a magnetic strip whose function is to make everybody lose their bearings. To pull everyone outside of himself into scramble lines of force. Decompression is simply the control of antagonisms by power. The opposition of two terms is given its real meaning by the introduction of a third. As long as there are only two equal and opposite polarities, they neutralize each other, since each is divined by the other. As it is impossible to choose between them, we are led into the domain of tolerance and relativity, which is so dear to the bourgeoisie. In a merciless confrontation between God and Satan, what would have been left of ecclesiastical authority? Nothing, as the millenarian crises demonstrated. That is why the secular arm carried out its holy offices, and the pyres crackled for the mystics of God or the devil. Those overbold theologians who questioned the principle of three in one. The temporal masters of Christianity were resolved that only they should be entitled to treat of the difference between the master of good and the master of evil. They were the great intermediaries through which the choice of one side or the other had to pass. They controlled the paths to salvation and damnation, and this control was more important to them than salvation and damnation themselves. On earth, they proclaimed themselves judges without appeal, since they had also decided to be the judge in the afterlife, whose laws they had invented. The Christian myth diffused the bitter Manichaean conflict by offering to the believer the possibility of individual salvation. This was the breach opened up by the poor bugger of Nazareth. Thus, man escaped the rigors of a confrontation which necessarily led to the destruction of values, denialism. But the same stroke denied him the opportunity to reconquer himself by means of a general upheaval, the chance of taking his place in the universe by chasing out the gods and their slave makers. But the same stroke denied him the opportunity to reconquer himself by means of a general upheaval, the chance of taking his place in the universe by chasing out the gods and their slave masters. Therefore, the movement of decompression appears to have had the function of shackling man's most irreducible desire, the desire to be completely himself. In all conflicts between opposing sides, an irrepressible upsurge of individual desires takes place and often reaches a threatening intensity. To this extent, we are justified in talking of a third force. From the individual's point of view, the third force is what the force of decompression is from the point of view of power. The small chance of every struggle, it radicalizes insurrections, denounces false problems, threatens power in its very structure. It is what Brecht was referring to in one of his Kühner stories. When a proletarian was brought to court and asked if he wished to take the oath in the ecclesiastical or the lay form, he replied, quote, "I'm out of work." The third force does not hope for the withering away of constraints, but aims to supersede them. Prematurely crushed or incorporated, it becomes by inversion a force of decompression. Thus, the salvation of the soul is nothing but the will to live, incorporated through myth, mediated, emptied of its real content. On the other hand, their peremptory demand for a full life explains the hatred incurred by certain agnostic sects, or by the Brethren of the Free Spirit. During the decline of Christianity, the struggle between Pascal and the Jesuits spotlighted the opposition between the reformist doctrine of individual salvation and the compromise with heaven and the project of realizing God by the nihilist destruction of the world. Individualism, alcoholism, collectivism, activism. The variety of ideologies show that there are 100 ways of being on the side of power. There is only one way to be radical. The wall that must be knocked down is immense, but it has been cracked so many times that soon a single cry will be enough to bring it crashing to the ground. Let the formidable reality of the third force emerge at last from the mists of history, with all of the individual passions that have fueled the insurrections of the past. Soon, we shall find that an energy is locked up in everyday life which can move mountains and abolish distances. The long revolution is preparing to write works in the ink of action whose unknown or nameless authors will flock to join Sade, Feuer, Babeuf, Marx, Lassignère, Vautremont, Vallien, Henry, Villa, Zapata, the Communards, the insurrectionaries of Hamburg, Kiel, Kronstadt, Asturias, all those who have not yet played their last card in a game which we have only just joined, the great gamble whose stake is freedom. Thanks for listening, folks. That was the Union of Time Thieves, and you are on the KBOO Portland frequency. Next up is the most sudden of sudden radio. Stay tuned.
The bus left 10 minutes ago.
What?
The bus left.
I told you I was driving today.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Mom, I feel sick.
I feel heartless. Get out of bed. I was going to drive the kids. Now they have to take the bus.
I thought it just left.
Your bus left. The school bus leaves in half an hour and I have to get 3 children punches, cleansed, clothed, and cornflaked before then. Bathroom's free.
I'm on it. Next!
God, he took forever!
Sorry, I was still waking up.
I'm next, I have to do my makeup.
Oh, I'm next!
I'm next. I have to do my makeup. Take me a look. Stop it. Stop it. It's my turn. I'm gonna do it next. I wanna do it next. I wanna do it next. Don't get it.
It's the final hour of the final Monday of the month here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Time to strap yourselves in for the quickest 60 minutes on your radio. This is the Sun Radio Project. What are you doing?
My morning meditation. Ties in the laundry room. Coats on the back of the sofa. Breakfast on the counter. Lunch is in the fridge. Keys are hanging by the garage door. Love ya. Have a nice day.
And for those on the go, traffic is slow, slow, and slow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You want a tequila sunrise after driving the sunset. And it's still no fun once you pass through the tunnel. A mile-wide slide is clogged inside. Cornell looks like hell and MLK is hosed. The three-digit highways are moving at single digits. And forget the bridges. You're better off swimming.
That's just great. Hello?
Hello?
This is Bill.
Hey, Bill. It's Phil.
Hey, Phil.
How are you, Bill?
Not bad, Phil. You?
Not bad, Bill. Working?
Nope.
No?
Driving.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How is it?
Slow.
Slow?
Slow.
Bummer.
Yep. Lunch?
Now?
No.
When?
Lunch.
Sure.
Sure?
Yep.
Yeah.
See ya.
See ya.
May I help you, ma'am?
Hello, young lady. How are you today?
Just fine, ma'am.
Glad to hear it.
Jesus Christ, this is killing me.
I would like, let's see.
Ugh.